Greetings, Earthlings. Welcome to another edition of This Week in Mormons. We are delighted to be here with all of you. Thank you for taking the time to join us as we discuss your Mormon news and give you your dose of what's happening in the world of Mormonism. Al is holding a box of hot tamales in front of me.
I was warning you so that you wouldn't... Jeff, we can edit this out in post, the me chewing hot tamales.
Oh, is that was a warning about hot tamale chewing?
Now, I don't want you to actually talk about them. I just want you to know that I've got them.
Okay.
Know that it's a thing.
You are like a woman. You expect me to read your mind. You hold up hot tamales, and I'm supposed to know all those things from it. All those things.
No, I think that's completely fair. I don't feel like that's outlandish.
I hate you so much right now.
Anyway, how are you, Jeff? Are you well?
I'm fine. Things are hum-dandy, you know?
When did we record last? Where was I? I was in
Milwaukee. I believe you were in Chicago last week on last week's show. So since then, you did a White Sox game. You went to Cedar Point. You went to an Indians game.
I did a Cubs game as well.
And you went to Canada.
And I went to Canada. Now I'm home. I'm back in Missouri. I'm here. I fly out Sunday for Education Week. Any guys going to be at Education Week? Holla at me. Let's do a meetup.
Really? Do you want to do that?
Sure, I'd do it.
I feel like you like sincerely don't ever want to meet our listeners. That's why I just don't know. I feel like you want to hold them at arm's length and not associate.
What are you talking about?
People.
Jeff, I've met AKA the Badger. Whatever his Instagram is.
You met Edwin?
Yeah, I met Edwin. We were both going to an opera, maybe? A symphony, something.
That doesn't sound like
it. And we met there. It was delightful. Also, I think we've both been on dates with listeners. This has happened.
I don't actually know if I have, actually, come to think of it.
Well, you went on a date with Aubrey from How I Met Your Mormon Mother.
That is fair, but she was not a listener by any means. But she did.
She was, yeah, okay.
It was even worse. I went out with a show guest. I went out with a client.
Yeah, you took a potential advertiser out to dinner. And then she got mad that you didn't pay for her Savers purchases.
Hey, you know, if the girl can afford Neiman's, I figure.
Best part of that story.
There were
best part of that story is how cheap she and you both got, and that's why it didn't work out.
There were a number of reasons why it did not work out, not least of which was the fact that I took none of it seriously.
Yeah, that could have been. That could have been.
It's a little.
But you were still awkward on that date. I feel like if I watch that show,
it's very awkward.
You're still awkward.
Well, I'm an awkward person in general, right? I don't know. I'm not very sociable. Don't know what I'm doing.
No, you're so smooth, Jeff.
And aside from that,
you've made out with hundreds and hundreds of women in that poor Southern California state.
Sure, whatever. And but not least of what, I did have a girlfriend at the time of the Mormon Bachelorette, which made it much more awkward to go on a date with
somebody. No, but you were going to break up with her anyway.
That's irrelevant.
That's actually funny because I've had girls that I was dating, well, like quasi-dating, that were like, hey, I'm going to go on The Bachelor now. And I'm like, so I guess that means this isn't a thing? We're done?
No.
And then they go and be on TV and throw themselves after some other man.
It
kind of kills a relationship. I feel like that dooms a relationship.
It does.
You doom.
And you know what? We've seen the one on The Bachelor. Her appearance was nothing. She must have been so not entertaining to the producers because you don't even see her ever.
When you don't drink and you're not throwing yourself off the balcony into the pool, you just don't get the airtime.
Who would have thought? I have been watching Bachelor in Paradise, though. It's been a delight.
What is this?
Well, it's the show when they take a bunch of rejects from the previous... They got rid of Bachelor Pad, which I never have seen. But they take the rejects from the other shows, bring them all together in a slightly different format, where they're genuinely just trying to find love, but it's more of a free-for-all. There's no, like, rigid thing in the dates, and then, like, group dates and this and that. They do get to go on dates one-on-one, but more or less, it's just a free-for-all. And people are actually trying to find somebody.
Which sounds much more desperate, much more humiliating.
Here's the thing. It's still ridiculous. This season has been a little bit more mean-spirited, like I think the producers want it to be. Last season was actually enjoyable television because there were people on the show who actually got to hang out and not just go on random dates in helicopters, but instead just hang out with each other for a couple weeks by the beach and get to know each other and actually develop a relationship.
Like get to know each other in real-life situations. Like, hey, let's be by the beach for 6 weeks.
A real-life situation is sitting on the beach.
See how you're going to handle the struggles of fatherhood.
Exactly. Exactly. Those struggles are very real when you're in Mexico.
I feel like all of those relationships should be doomed to fail just because real life is not sitting by a beach in Mexico.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure it is.
Okay. Well, I mean, different realities for different.
My view of from my apartment of the Washington Monument tells me that I am very close to the beach.
Yeah. Well, the monument points straight towards the beach.
No, Al. The monument points straight to heaven because this is America's capital. Sanctioned.
No, I'm picturing, yeah, if you're looking at it like a 2D rendering, sure, yeah, okay.
Sure, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Points,
no, that's
points
fine.
Points up.
So,
other than that, I'm super, got a new counselor.
Fatherhood, you're still doing that thing with the kid?
Hey, you know, he's a month old now. It's very exciting.
1 month? Matthias, well done.
Not only is he a month old, it was my wife's birthday. That was delightful. We had a grand time.
Oh my gosh!
I didn't see
that.
You.
That is neat.
I don't. Jeff. I don't see you texting her or having called her or anything. So I don't know.
Well, it's all my texts are in Snapchat. They disappear after about 20 seconds.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
And so just have her look there.
Is that what I have to do to communicate with you now? Is get on Snapchat? Is that what I?
Well, no. To communicate with one of my best friend's wives, I need to communicate by Snapchat. Obviously.
Fair.
This is. Jeff, you got to know your audience. You know what I'm saying?
Fair enough. And other than that, my other big news.
And I shave messages in my chest hair, and I just have to slowly show her what it says.
Wasn't there a video recently where you just did a ridiculous dance?
Yeah, no.
Because I see these sometimes, and they make me.
I believe you Snapchatted me something, and I responded with a shirtless dance. That's fair.
Yeah.
I think that might have been me. That could have been.
And that was strong. That alone makes me want to actually get on Snapchat just so I can have these.
So my birthday also was this last week.
I guess.
And I was in Cleveland, and we had it was like a 20-minute walk through the Hall of Rock and Roll Fame roller, and it was synchronized with flame machines and fireworks. It was quite a show at the end of that Cleveland Indians game. And really, I mean, just a treat, just real nice. And I felt like similar to when the Olympics opening ceremonies were on 8-8-08. Again, I felt like that was one of the best birthday presents I'd ever gotten, was watching that tribute to me. And then here with the Indians, I felt the same thing several years later of just massive display, for my birthday. It's really nice. Just really nice of them. Really nice of everybody. Thank you.
Well, that sounds like a treat.
Yeah.
I hope you had some of that famed Cleveland cuisine.
There is no famed Cleveland cuisine. I'll tell you, if I never had to eat another crappy stadium hamburger again, and so when we go to these stadiums, I just look up like all the things they're famous for, like the brisket nacho helmet for $15 or the you know, like 8-gallon milkshake. And of course, you got to get them because you're only there once, right?
Yeah,
we're traveling through. We got to sample this fare.
Because you need it. You got to have it.
Well, there was one Chicago dog style or hot dog Chicago style that was put onto a hamburger as well. It was sort of a mountain of greasy, terrible cheese paste.
Don't Carl's Jr. and Hardee's have that very same burger right now? Isn't that the same thing?
They may. I don't think it's done as poorly as a lukewarm version of it from a kiosk vendor. And so I'm pretty sure I'm battling some sort of a food sickness, but I just can't tell because everything I eat is normally crappy
you
like
see,
that.
You should have sprung for like the Diamond Club or whatever they have, where you have a nice meal behind home
plate.
No,
I don't want to eat like normal, regular food. I wanted to eat the famous. So when people are like, hey, oh, yeah. You went to Cellular One, Cellular or U.S. Cellular Park in Chicago. Yeah, you got the Comiskey Burger? Of course you did. And I'm like, you're dang right. I got the Comiskey Burger.
When I was in Pittsburgh, I got a Pimenti Brothers burger or something, and it was fine, but it wasn't.
Yeah. Oh, that's with the French fries. It's delightful.
Yeah. It was fun. Pittsburgh's a great park, though. It's probably the nicest park in all of baseball.
I don't believe that. I'm in Kansas City with the Royals.
But see, when you go to a game at the Nats, you can go to Shake Shack. They have one.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that.
So anyway,
it was like I'm excited to detox. I'm only eating hot tamales and juice for the next 2 weeks.
How about a salad? Get a nice salad. Get your salad on.
I'm not good with salad.
And then maybe a chaser of Panda Express.
I can't get my fork to work very well on lettuce. You know how this goes. Anyway.
I don't actually.
Back to Mormon news. Let us not digress, Jeff. Let us not.
That's true. We have some guests coming on later on in the show, so we have time to devote to that at a certain point.
We do. We will be talking about the movie Once I Was a Beehive, a Beehive, a Beehive. Once I Was a Beehive All Day Long.
Which apparently was used as a vehicle to convert non-LDS actors.
Stay tuned for more.
Yeah.
More to follow.
Anyway, first stuff I want to bring up. Okay, I love this. This came up. Church PR, Al, the public affairs office, does not go rogue. That is according to Michael Otterson, the public affairs director of the church.
Do we believe this?
I choose to believe anything Michael Otterson says. If he weren't so valuable, they would have called him to the 12 by now.
So he gave a keynote speech or something close to a keynote speech at the Fair Mormon Conference.
Yes. Yeah. So that's friendly turf, for one, to give a speech like this, which is good.
So it's a nice long bit. He touched on a couple of interesting things. One of them is the, they don't go rogue. So apparently, like you and I were speculating about the response to the Boy Scouts. So it seemed a little shoot from the hip-ish.
Yeah.
And he's saying that does not happen. They counsel. They review everything, and then it goes out as a unified voice. I just find that hard to believe, though. I think that this was an intern that probably got fired. That's what I'm predicting.
you're still holding true to that.
I feel for sure.
And I get it, because I love that the Brother Otterson stresses like what the structure is for this stuff. It's not just them in there. It's funny, there's an apostle who's assigned to public affairs. He seems to go out of his way to not name that apostle. I don't know why that has to be a secret, but whatever. There's also the highest ranking president of the 70, a female member of the general officers of the church, probably someone from the General Relief Society presidency. But who knows? Maybe not. It could be that one who's in the primary presidency that they tap for everything all the time. And there's also another member of the 70. They have a lot of people involved, and he says everything goes through that. He does say there are times when public affairs might have its own reaction to something and write something on it, but then they send that to the brethren, and the brethren definitely have opinions and make notes and cross stuff out and approve stuff. So we can take that with the Boy Scout thing, for example. Take it to mean... Okay, someone vetted the Boy Scout thing. My only, and I believe it, my one main question, though, with that, if you remember the Boy Scout letter, is that the letter was almost whiny and stressing that the church was basically on recess until August and that Boy Scouts made the decision without anyone in Salt Lake being able to be together and discuss the decision and have their input. So if that was the case, who was around then?
Yeah.
Working with
who
public
are these
affairs?
People?
I'm assuming they have... backup, and they have contingencies for all these situations. I'm not saying that there wasn't anybody involved, but the timing of that is curious because if someone is always around doing it, then why are you complaining that nobody was around when the decision was being made? I don't know. But I don't
know.
This
is like Crossfire on CNN. You got him. You got him, Jeff.
That is my goal. Every day when I get up, I say, how can I get the church? That's what I'm
saying. How do I got you? I also liked a story he shared of his wife who is from Liverpool. He's from Liverpool. That at one point she tried to meet Paul McCartney by knocking on his door to use the bathroom.
Yep. And they let her in.
Yeah, they let her in, but
he wasn't there. Other cool stuff in this. It's a great read. We'll post the video of it, too, on our website with this episode if you go find it. But he talks about disciplinary councils. Because we saw a lot of that going on over the past 18 months or so. People questioning Salt Lake's direct involvement in what are supposed to be local disciplinary councils. And he says, he's like, to my knowledge, the First Presidency and the 12 do not direct the outcomes of these things. They must remain independent, especially the First Presidency. But he says, what I can say, though, is that basically a plausible explanation that general authorities every 6 months all come to church headquarters for training right before general conference. Over the years, these have covered a wide range of topics. And one of them was how to hold disciplinary councils, which happened recently in the recent past. And so it's not surprising that probably works its way down to regional training and that it seems like a coincidence, because everyone thought it was a weird coincidence that John Dolan and Kate Kelly both got served at the same time, more or less. But there's not to say that, hey, this training probably hit them at the same time. A stake president might have been thinking about how to deal with this issue for some time, and he received the counsel he needed to act. And I think that is a fully reasonable explanation for things. And it makes sense. I mean, how when we have general conference and there's some great talk with a great council, how much of a unified reaction do we often have as a body of saints to a particular talk by somebody?
Yeah, all of a sudden, all we can talk about is Sabbath day observance. Boom.
Boom.
It's all day, every day, in every meeting.
Yeah. So there's a lot we could talk about in this whole transcript, but give it a read. Go to our website. Check it out.
Anything else good out of there? What else?
A lot of good things. I've read through the whole thing, but I did not like take notes. I loved his whole story about his conversion to the church, how he read a lot of stuff in the library.
You can say no, nothing else stood out to you. That's fine. You don't have to make up some story about his conversion.
This one is true. When he converted, he knew all the nitty-gritty of the church, so it actually surprised him, working in public affairs, how many of the members of the church were surprised by the essays and stuff that we've had for the past couple of years. Because he'd always kind of assumed the stuff's there. It's scholarly. Yep. It's available.
You could read it. People, you could read it.
So that was interesting that he talked about the process of creating those essays, where they debated having really short things or 50-page in-depth analyses of things. They tried to find a middle ground within that. There's a lot of good stuff in here. And also the other part I like is that he talks about how the church's doctrines have remained constant. He thinks it's actually surprising to him how little the stuff that we talk about has changed in the years he's been involved with the church. But our approach has changed. And he even admits that some of the language we used in the past could easily be considered caustic or offensive. And it's language of its era, and we shouldn't use it to judge this era or to dump it on that. And so, of course, we change the messaging. We change how we reach an audience, and we change how we react, even if the fundamentals don't change.
Yeah.
And that was a good insight, too.
That was good.
Yeah.
Let's see. I got there's a couple of articles around callings here. Jana Reese has an article on that she published in, what is this, Religion News? The Religion News Service.
That's where she always publishes, yes.
That's her thing. That's her thing now. Flunking sainthood is there, but she says,
she is flunking.
When should Mormons say no to a church calling?
Correct answer is never. Ever.
Excellent point, Jeff. This is actually interesting because she sort of gives a story, as I think many of us have probably experienced, where a calling is extended and you feel maybe overworked a little bit. I have a story I often share where when I was in college, I was taking about 25 credit hours. I was very, very stressed. I was working probably 40 hours a week-ish and volunteering a similar amount. Like, I was sleeping very little and working on life quite a bit, and went into my bishop for a blessing, and he extended to me a calling to serve in the temple. And I was like, that is a weird response to me dumping all this stuff on you. It ended up sort of saving my hide. I had 5 hours every week that was set aside to me just like being sane and in silence and thinking about Jesus and life, and it was very good for me. But at the time, you know, it seemed like something that I couldn't possibly handle. On the flip side of that, there are many times where there are things that it seems that we could not possibly handle, and we legitimately cannot handle them. There's things that that often a bishop or a stake president or somebody will pray, and there, and a lot of how this works, I feel like, is a little bit like a mission transfer board in a lot of ways, where you're given a finite number of missionaries and a finite number of areas that need to be filled, and you're using the Spirit to try and match these up, and you are matching them, hopefully getting confirmation with the Spirit as you go, but it's not
right.
It's not perfect, and you're using the information that you know to try and make your best guess, and then getting that confirmed as you go. And sometimes the best guess doesn't include some information that would have changed that outcome. Things like, in this article, there's a couple of reasons that Jana says that maybe might influence you saying no to a calling. If you have family or marital problems that the bishop is unaware of, you're suffering from a newly diagnosed mental illness, you're suffering from a previously diagnosed mental illness that you don't have control of, you're dealing with severe doubts of the church, God, or the mission of Joseph Smith, a calling might help you to deal with those things, but it might not. You know, one of the ways to get through doubts, I find, is through service, through jumping in and working on stuff and having conversations. Yeah. A criminal history the bishop doesn't know about,
You should definitely disclose things like that. And if you've prayed about calling yourself and you received an answer that it's not the right one for you at the time. There's a lot of reasons to say yes to a calling. Obviously, things like, if you're not feeling up to it, or if you're feeling discouraged, or if you're feeling overwhelmed like I was, I think those are times when you can sort of reevaluate some of your priorities and jump in there. But there's good and bad, and I think as a church we sort of preach the gospel of don't ever say no. It's if the Lord extends you a calling, your job is to say yes. True most of the time, but like be smart about it.
Yeah.
Don't be blind.
Well, because there will certainly be times where you might feel inadequate or think you're too busy or think you haven't accomplished what you need to in your current calling, whatever it might be. But think about it, because the Lord knows better than we do. And there might be times to say no, especially if you are dealing with mental illness or if you are a criminal, for example. That could be a problem.
I think a great example, like you're in the Elders Quorum, or you're the Elders Quorum president now, right? And that's one of those that no matter what, when that comes to you, the initial reaction is, I don't have time. I'm not up to this challenge. I would prefer to just be a home teacher, if at all possible. That's sort of the reaction. And then when you get in there, I mean, here's the interesting thing is like, I told my bishop this just the other day. The Lord never calls bishops to be bishops. He calls punk 35-year-old guys with poor management skills to become a bishop. And that's really the crux of it. So don't expect to be perfect at calling.
And as far as the time thing goes, what I have found in my experience is that somehow I find myself with adequate time to get things done that I need to get done. It can feel very busy, but oddly, I find myself capable of having the time to do things when I think I'm not going to. It's very interesting how the Lord sort of qualifies us in ways. So it's not always perfect, but it's good. Let's see, some quick news. Let's do a couple quick items.
Before we leave that one.
I forgot. I'm sorry, I forgot.
Yeah, we had another article. One of our writers for This Week in Mormons, we're very excited to be doing, if you'd like to be a writer. Contact Jeff. But Josie Gleave, who apparently has a hot sister that I am to marry. I don't know about this yet. Josie wrote an article called The Uninspired Calling. Yes.
Jeff, yes.
Are you with me?
John, I'm with you.
Same page here.
I'm right here.
So this is, it's essentially about her journey as the eternal musician in the church. But it's got a twist ending. It's not what you think.
Should we tell people what it is or just tease them here and make them go read it?
No, tell them what it is.
Oh, well, the crux of it, of course, if you're a musical in the church, you often get relegated to musical callings forever. That's just what happens to you because they need people who can do it, and that's how it is. Josie discusses two different types, basically those who have their musical talent and love it and are open about it and just hop in whenever they can, and those who hide behind stuff and don't like to be involved for whatever reason. But by the end, what I like is that she kind of goes through this talking about how it's like so obvious, like you sit there with this member of the bishopric and they feel impressed, quote unquote, to call you as these things, even though it just seems like it's so, you're just obviously filling a void. And it's like, hey, this person plays piano, call into that, right? And that's all they get to do.
It's the transfer board, man. You just got to put them where you need them.
But the one thing to bear in mind, of course, is that sometimes callings do come are obvious. But I like that in the end she says, like, hey, I've witnessed my husband being called to positions that I never would have imagined for him, but he thrives in those challenges. I know that musical folks don't always have the same experience. They're usually this bunch of music aficionados. I wonder if it's a predetermined role. However, filling these spots isn't bad. I remember as a child watching the primary pianist work the piano, pump the pedals, and I wondered how the instrument worked. Because of that, I urged my parents and begged them to let me take piano lessons and to bring that zeal that I had seeing that woman play piano as a kid. I bring that today to what I can do in primary. And that's a great way to look at it, serving in a calling. So often we think about, it's all about me, me, me. What can I do? Why am I in this calling? Because of my abilities and what I'm supposed to do. And we totally forget that we're affecting other people, hopefully for the good, through our callings. Even if that's as much as setting an example and helping some kid to have an interest in learning the piano because they see someone playing it and doing it well and being engaged in that sense. And that could apply to any calling. That's something I think we very easily forget. I have so often looked at callings and thought about what it means to me without thinking about what it means to everybody else around me. And that's a good takeaway.
Yeah.
I like it. Do you have any thoughts on that, Al?
No thoughts. I agree.
Okay.
It's nice.
All right. I'm going to hit up some, let's talk about a couple of temple news, and then I think we'll bring our guests on, if that sounds okay with you, my friend. So, first off, two new temple groundbreakings were announced. There's a temple that was announced for Tucson, Arizona a couple years ago, and also one in Concepcion, Chile. Now, both temples are going to have ground broken on October 17th of this year, and the church has released artists' renderings of how the temples will be and the location of them and all that good stuff. So it's cool news. My favorite thing about this, though, by far, is that the Tucson temple has a dome. Okay, we have temples with spires all the time. Look at it, Al. It has an actual dome. It looks like an Italian Baroque it's a dome.
It's like, a dome.
Like, this temple needs to have a rotunda. This has to have a rotunda. They should make the celestial room right in the middle and have it be a full-on rotunda with, like, frescoes or murals or whatever around the interior of the dome. Like, let's take advantage of this and not let it just be a hollow dome. Hashtag no hollow dome.
Wait, where is this dome? I don't see it.
Are you looking at the link to the article?
I was looking at the Jordan River one. I'm sorry.
Oh, my goodness.
Let
me know when you get there.
All right. Hey, I'm sorry. This one's on me.
It's loading up. Do you see it yet?
Oh.
Right?
Oh. That's
like a state capitol building. It's kind of cool. It's different.
It could be a mosque.
Or it could be a mosque. I'm down with all of these things. The Concepcion Chile Temple is, I'm saying it like I'm French, Concepcion. It is not as like, oh, wow, look at the cool dome, but it's a beautiful looking building. Nice, more colonial, Spanish kind of colonial architecture. And it's going to be right by the beach down in Concepcion, Chile.
Now, let's squeeze a few more of these in before we do our guests. Is that okay?
Well, and then lastly, Jordan River, as you mentioned. The Jordan River Temple has been announced to be going down for an extensive renovation. It's going to close from February 15th, 2016, so you can still get in there for Valentine's Day, everybody, through the latter part of 2017 to undergo extensive renovation. They didn't elaborate a ton on what this means. They often don't. There are many rumors that they will remove the escalators. It's one of the few remaining temples that has escalators in it. And as one of our great Facebook followers pointed out, temple workers wearing white clothes or slippers on greasy escalators often doesn't give us the desired results. And it's just not necessary anymore.
Why are escalators greasy?
Because they have to move gears and such. I myself have never stood on an escalator in a mall or whatever and walked away and looked at my shoes and said, my goodness, it's like I walked through a field of petroleum. What is happening here? That's never happened. But yeah. It's probably time
again,
to bring it up.
We don't wear the white Velcro sneakers quite as much.
So it's time to bring it up to date just a little bit. So
really quick, this is interesting too. The Odessa, Ukraine, Centralny district has been discontinued. This from LDSChurchGrowth.blogspot.com. None of the branches appear to be discontinued. They're all reporting directly to the Ukraine Kyiv mission. And no one really knows why. We're speculating, just with some of the unrest down that way, it would appear that the church is probably not investing in more formalized church structure over there.
Maybe, but at the same time, like I told you before, I mean, there's not really a lot of violence in Odessa or Western Ukraine or anything. I mean,
there was a lot. I mean, that's where a lot of the fighting was in the beginning.
Odessa had the Crimea stuff, and it's been the east. Odessa had that really unfortunate incident with that building fire that killed a ton of people, and there's been some random improvised explosive devices here and there since then. But it's not.
But if you're going to, once you have the Crimea, which Russia does, that's where do you go with that port of or that fleet of ships? You go to Odessa.
It's an obvious target, and that is a big part of why, if you're not aware, Al, that the former Georgian president Mikhail Saakashvili is now the governor of the Odessa Oblast. Very funny.
Yeah, sort of random, but yeah.
The man who led the Rose Revolution is now the governor of Odessa.
Well,
specifically,
so again, there's a stake in Kyiv. And a district, anything that's part of a district, reports up to the mission, not to the state. And so
it does. Branches, a district reports that. So even without a district, it's just autonomous branches reporting.
These branches and it says you, cared over by missionaries and things of that nature. Now.
And then it says Ukraine and Ukraine has two other districts. I'm not sure which they are. I'm guessing one's probably like, what, Kharkiv, and the other one's Lviv, maybe? Or
yeah, they have one in Lviv, and they have, yeah, that's right.
All right, and now we're going to change things up a bit, and we bring some guests to our wonderful program. We all know how much all of you enjoy that.
Aloha.
Immensely. Immensely. Aloha. So we are pleased to be joined by Haley Smith and Lisa-Valentine-Clark of the wonderful upcoming film, Once I Was a Beehive. Welcome, sisters. Thank you for being here.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
They're very,
very
busy.
Much.
They appear to be huddled around a washing machine somewhere.
We're not quite sure
what's happening.
We're always multitasking. Yeah. Don't stop us. Don't slow us down.
And you guys are down in us. So you guys are in Provo, right?
Yeah.
Just Zion, true country right there.
Right in the middle.
How is Provo?
It's great. You know, it's changing a lot. It's got a big, vibrant music scene and art scene, local art scene, and filmmaking scene down here. It's really great. There's a lot of really fun people down here.
I haven't spent a lot of time in Provo since my BYU days. So
it's pretty much, Jeff, it's the Neon Trees times like 1,000 other bands. It's really good.
Are you serious?
Yeah. No, for real.
My understanding is that Imagine Dragons just have like a weekly review.
They just keep going.
Yeah,
the fictionists. It's fun. Yeah, they're all down here. So it's great.
Now you're just name dropping. The fictionists.
I haven't even started. Do you want me to name
these? I think all these people are in her ward.
They're all in my ward. They're the greatest guys. You have no idea.
So they all live within like one square block then? Because we know how wards in Provo are.
No, they're all at the Belmont.
Do you want us to go get them?
Totally.
they all live at the Belmont, Jeff. We've been there. We know how this works.
Oh, they're walking by.
Lisa, if I'm not mistaken, if it comes to mind, you did Pretty Darn Funny, right? Was that was you?
Yep.
Yes. Okay.
Two seasons of that web series. Yep.
I remember the.
What is Pretty Darn Funny? Should I have seen this?
I believe we covered it once on the show, Al.
It was a funny little web series about a mom who starts her own comedy troupe.
Did it work?
It worked. I started the troupe. It was funny.
That's all you committed to.
If I remember, there's a great spoof of Footloose.
It was just my dream come true that I got to reenact the warehouse scene of Kevin
the protest
Bacon
dance.
Dancing. Yeah, where instead of a can of beer and a cigarette, I've got some Twizzlers and a Diet Coke, and I just let loose.
You sound
it was
like
really fun.
Sound like me on a road trip. It sounds wonderful.
Right, just to be free.
Some Tahitian noni would have been more on the mic.
That's true.
That's fair.
That's a fair note.
And Haley, though, you are a Coloradan resident now at this point. You were drawn to the region because of the loose cannabis laws. You decided to.
No comment. We used to live in Provo, and then we moved to Manhattan, and now we're in Denver. And you know, we actually did kind of try to go back to Utah, but
that was the plan all along that we would live in the same city again.
But
didn't work out.
Didn't work out that way. But you know, Denver's closer. It's great. Could still do creative stuff with each other.
So there was a plan. So you guys like besties? You guys go back a long ways.
Yes.
Give us paint for us a word picture. Tell us the history.
Okay.
Okay, so we used to do improv separately. She did Garen's comedy troupe at BYU. I did comedy sports in Utah, or Provo. And then we started our own improv troupe. It's called The Thrillionaires, and we did long-form improv, theatrical improv, different styles like Shakespeare or film noir, lots of musicals. And we did that with McLean Nelson, who directed the movie that we're gonna
what is the track for an improv person in Utah? Do you eventually make it to Second City in Chicago? Like, is that
a lot of people have, like McLean has gone through Second City he's gone through Groundlings in LA, and a lot of one of our other founding members, Jake, is in Chicago, and he's done a lot of improv training, and we've had other people go into New York to do that kind of training. My husband studied with Second City too.
Wait, you married another funny person?
I married the funniest person that you've ever met in your whole life. I know, I'm sorry. I'm going to get choked up if I start talking about Chris Clark.
I feel like that's almost, I mean, that's the, that's a little taboo. I feel like the funny people marry the non-funny people so that normal people emerge and you don't exceed.
Do you have any comment on that? Hey, I married an attorney, but he's very funny.
Oh, good. See, like you're doing your part.
Oh, yeah.
That's perfect.
The funniest attorney you'll ever meet.
No, blah, blah, blah.
You bet.
He seems delightful.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah.
He's a nice man. He's a very nice man.
He's very good.
So how did you guys hear about this movie? Like, how did you get roped into this? Was it just McLean is this famed fellow you speak of? He just calls you and says, I need funny.
Well, to take you back to paint this picture, we did the Thrillionaires. We had so much fun doing it. And then everyone moved. Haley moved to New York. McLean moved to L.A. Jake moved to Chicago. I stayed here. And a couple other members just kind of went their separate ways. But it was always the plan. Hey, we're going to do projects. You know, and someday we're gonna film a movie together. That was always like the dream, and
you know, like you do,
you know, like you do with your friends. You always say you're gonna make a movie, and then you do. And McLean has been making movies, and he's had a lot of great success. And when he had after, especially Saratov Approach, after that, everyone kept saying, "Well, what are you gonna do next? What are you gonna do next?" And Haley and I were like, "This is the perfect time to jump in and say, let's do something together." And so when he came and said, let's do this story. We were ready. We were ready to go. So, that's the very beginning of the Girls the Camp movie.
Now it says that it's Once I Was a Beehive is based on a bunch of true stories, right? I mean, so how that's an interesting way to put it, because it's just basically like a lot of true
thousands,
stories.
Thousands, I believe, is the tagline. Thousands
of true stories. So where did you get this? I mean, I don't know. We don't want to spoil too much for the movie going audience, but what stuff was inspired? Where did that come from?
Oh yeah, sure.
That's before we even started writing, we made like a spreadsheet and we just brainstormed. Like everything that had ever happened to anyone at a girls' camp that we had been to or that we had heard of. We interviewed mothers, grandmothers,
camp directors,
sisters, friends, daughters, some of the stuff from the movies from my daughter's first year experience. And everything that happens in the movie has happened at an actual
because
girls' camp.
Because something about girls' camp is that everybody has a story or an opinion about girls' camp. You know, like strong feelings about girls' camp. And so that's one of the reasons why we wanted to do this movie, because we just thought, I can't believe nobody's done it before. It's such a hot topic, like that people are like, either I loved it or I hated it or this weird thing happened. And everyone's got a story. And so we wanted to stay true to that. But obviously, we're writing a movie. You have
what were some of the urban legends that weren't verifiable that didn't make it in?
Oh my gosh! Well, I can't tell you how many people like within like our first few minutes of announcing the movie were like, "There better be a snipe hunt in it."
I know, and we were like, "That's so rude." Then why would you ruin snipe hunting for the rest of history? Because girls would watch that movie and go, "Yeah, I'm not going to be an idiot." Like, why would we? Yeah, that
you've saved snipe hunting for generations to come. That's a good point.
We would like to be thanked for that. Yeah. We like that acknowledged. So we didn't do. We didn't go there.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Urban legends. I don't know.
Urban legends.
Don't you have those things with girls' camp where they're like, "Oh yeah, no, it wasn't me, but a friend. She went to girls' camp, then."
Oh, right.
Sent home.
Yes, obviously there's always
boys sneaking into
camp.
In fact, I know a woman who she like got engaged or something.
That's the most romantic way.
Like she was a Laurel. And I remember thinking that is horrible and bizarre, but yeah, you hear stuff once you start making a movie about girls' camp, people share their stories with you.
It's
the weirdest
funny,
things they've happened.
Yes.
Now, despite my beliefs in gender equality, I have never been to girls' camp, nor have I been invited in any capacity.
Oh, sorry.
And And so when I was watching the movie with my wife, I was kind of like, is this like legit? Like all these songs and these activities you do? Because Scout Camp is nothing like that. Scout Camp is a bunch of dudes hanging out, eating bags of chips and pretending to be productive. Yeah.
You guys are frozen. Can you see us?
I think they're frozen, actually.
It was a really good question, too. A really good one.
I was...
You were really... Your questions, I mean, as an interviewer, I feel like you're a little bit Barbara Walters. You were setting it up so elegantly, and then you came at it like a Happy Gilmore drive.
So much for that Google Fiber. Oh my God.
I'm sorry. I know. We brag about it so much in Provo. And it's
you haven't signed up for it, have you? That's it.
No, it's okay. I have.
Anyway, so I was just saying that I was blown away by how potentially true to life these girls' camp rituals are. I don't know. I mean, I've never had a Noah's Ark towed in for any kind of activity.
Oh. Wait, was that based on a true thing?
Any form.
Well, I'm not sure anyone has, but you know, as we kept saying in the, you know, it's the movie of girls' camp, so we have to have, you know, it has to be a little bit,
you know, someone's
larger than
somewhere
life.
Somebody's done that. It's not out of the realm of possibilities. If you know young women's leaders who are dedicated and would just do anything to make it the best experience ever.
Yeah. 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 We got a kick of that visual of Carrie Carrington, who Lisa plays, in her backyard for like a year building an ark.
It's more testimonies were made that day with that ark.
Right. Right.
It's an impressive. Al hasn't been able to. Mm-hmm. Al hasn't seen the movie yet. Al, it's very impressive. Not only can the ark is a physical structure in which one can enter and climb. It's got multiple.
Yeah,
levels.
No, I'm envisioning it in my mind right now. I see it.
Picture, if you will, a bunch of animals.
Yep.
Russell Crowe.
Yep.
That sort of thing.
I'm Evan Almighty in my head. That's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, I just keep saying frozen because I don't want you to. Have to say anything.
Now, speaking of Frozen, this is a beautiful segue to perhaps my main criticism of the film. And I have some honest questions for you.
Okay. Okay.
Let's talk about glaciers for a second.
Yeah. Let's.
So glaciers are beautiful, beautiful structures. They're very large. They carve out canyons, as we're informed. Now,
fjords,
in this film,
even,
I believe
Jeff,
a glacier
fjords.
Is depicted as snow dumped onto a park, is my understanding.
Okay. Well, there's a story
there.
That is
there. My interpretation as well.
As you,
you are correct.
Maybe not so much snow as bubbles, even. But
it's a lot of soap. Spoiler.
Hey, listen. So Timpanogos has this beautiful glacier.
Yeah.
But apparently, you're not allowed to film on the Timpanogos Glacier unless your movie is about the Timpanogos Glacier.
That's a thing.
Yeah, like a documentary. Yeah, that's a thing. No, it's a real
so
thing.
So now everyone knows that, you know.
So don't even try.
Yeah, don't. We've been there. It hurts. We had big
Wait, you went to the glacier and got shut down? Did they shut down filming?
No. We tried to get permission ahead of time.
Yeah.
And,
responsible
filmmakers. And we asked instead of asking for forgiveness.
Yeah, in hindsight, we probably should have just run up there and... But you know,
guerrilla filmmaking.
You can just assume that the city planner is not going to see this movie. I mean, it's fairly pretentious that you think you're going to get busted.
I don't know.
So in the end, Kiwanis Park was the backup. It seemed right, and so it worked out beautifully.
Sorry, American Fork.
I know it's.
How are they frozen again?
I know. Okay, now we're back. Are we back? I can hear you.
I'm so sorry.
The internet. I'm just glad we don't ever have to do business on this thing because it would be the worst.
Yeah.
Or use it for anything.
Mainly it's just solitaire and hearts, four-way hearts.
This is going to be an editing.
An editing nightmare for you. I'm so
delightsome.
Sorry.
It'll be great. Anyway, I was just asking you about, obviously, I'm assuming non-LDS actors were involved in this as well as LDS ones. So were any of the leads LDS, or did we go the old legacy movie route hire just bunch of crazy people?
Too soon.
Too soon. Too soon.
It's been at least 20 years. I feel like it's safe.
I know. We did an open casting call at the beginning. We advertised it on our website and Facebook and on TV, on the news. And we got a ton of submissions from people all over, as well as some interest from agencies and stuff who would send in tapes. And that's how we found our talent. Obviously, when we were writing it, some parts were already cast. Like I had already been cast as Carrie Carrington. Haley had already been cast as Holly.
No, we're talking to you.
Oh, good. No, I just couldn't see you, so I don't know if I'm on that.
Sorry.
Sorry. Because anyway, I'll just pretend like things aren't happening on my computer as I talk.
It's great things have happened. So we heard that you cast yourself in a movie as a vanity project. That's the main part that we heard, right?
They're making faces as though we were entertaining.
Other people weren't using.
Usually this is the best place,
Are you in the basement right now?
The internet. I don't usually have this problem, so. You know what I mean? Like I didn't anticipate.
Can you guys not hear us?
I'm really sorry. I need to go soon.
Oh, boy.
Maybe they can still hear us. Hello. Let's talk about the movie.
Hello.
And just anticipate.
We hear you. Do you hear us?
We hear you guys.
Haley, what was your favorite part?
No one hears each other.
Well, you know, every part. I love every part.
Can you guys hear us now? Are we back?
Oh, now I can. Yeah, now you're back.
Yes.
Did you hear us?
Yes, we heard you the whole time.
There you go.
Oh, good.
There's going to be so much great stuff in that when we publish it. Like, I know you have to go soon. We'll finish this up.
I'm just worried about her schedule.
No, are you kidding?
I don't know.
I live and die.
I know you do. Me too.
Okay.
It's our dream come true.
Okay, so I know you guys are a little bit strained for time, but the premise of the movie, can you give us your take on it?
Give us the pitch.
Oh, okay. All right. So the movie is there's a 16-year-old girl named Lane, and
she seems nice.
She's super a sweetheart. Nice. And she's not LDS, and so she is a non-LDS girl. Her father, you find out at the beginning of the movie, passes away. And then her mom remarries a Mormon guy.
Oh, gross.
And so, and she doesn't know anything about Mormons. And so when her mom goes on a honeymoon with her new stepdad, she ends up staying with his family and they're going to girls camp. So she ends up going to girls camp with them. And so it's kind of an LDS girls camp through the eyes of a non-LDS teenager. So,
and it's a coming of age story with a lot of comedy in it, but I like that it has a sweet message, about inclusion. And
was there like a normal girls camp when you invite someone that is not a member of the church, was there a hope that by bringing her into this film, she would join the church? I mean, was that sort of the idea in having a non-member play the lead role in this?
The actress? No.
Why we
isn't
made
that
the
how these things normally go?
Is this like the Book of Mormon movie where the guy who played Nephi joined the church later on?
No, we just.
How did you know?
We just maybe wanted her to hate us less. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. No.
I know.
If she learned our songs, she would have a place in her heart for us later.
She was lovely and gracious and just had a wonderful time. And actually, everyone on set, I mean.
That was one of the cool things about it, is that really filming this movie was just like going to girls' camp. You know, like we felt like we had to make sure everybody was okay and we had to be the moms of everything, make sure. You know,
good morale,
feeling good, and we wanted good feelings on set and have everybody feel included. And then by the end, when we're all like love each other and we cry and we have to act, it was a lot easier because by the end, when we were filming the testimony scene, it was a genuine like love for each other. Like we're all really good friends, and that's awesome. Just never been on a set like that. It was really good. It was really sweet.
It was method acting by the end, basically.
Yeah.
You were just.
That's great. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was sweet.
And one of the other things people might appreciate about it is decidedly not man-centric, I felt like watching it. I mean, there's a bishop character in it, but the bishop basically shows up and just says, like, I'm going to hang out in my tent.
We had to do that so we wouldn't get complaints. We had to at least, probably technically there should be more, but, you know. That's fine because this one is about the girls. It's for the women.
And this is what I'm really like proud of that, because every aspect of the filmmaking was influenced heavily by females. So just not only the cast, which is a predominant female cast, but the writing had females. The editing was done by a female. The art direction, the hair and makeup, like any and the producing, any major part of making this movie was mostly females.
Go women.
And then you've got Plane. And I know. Yeah, I'm really proud of that. You know, and I feel like we don't really tell very many stories about LDS young women and women with, a realistic, authentic taste. And I love, like, being able to contribute something to that genre. And I hope that there'll be more stories like that.
Yeah.
Is there a sequel in the works?
Well, for sure we want to work together again. That's a no-brainer. Yeah. Like, I can't wait to get a lot of the cast and the crew again to do something. So yeah, we all want to work together again.
We have to get this one out first.
Too soon, too fresh.
This could be great. This could be like a Wes Anderson type thing where all the same actors and people get together for every movie and just do different stuff.
I love that. I would love that.
No, that's our dream. Yeah, I know. That was one of the most awesome things about being a producer is, you know, you can kind of, look at your friends and be like, oh, I've got a part for you.
And that's what's so fun about doing improv in this area. Like, having done improv for the last 20 years in Provo and around this area, I have a lot of really funny, talented friends. And a lot of them are still here. Some of them are spread across, the world or whatever. But boy, I mean, if you can just like choose what you do with your life, and if I could just make movies with my funny friends, boy, that would be the greatest
not
thing
a bad
in
way
my
to
whole
go.
Life.
Not
a bad
way. No, there are worse things.
And this movie... Well,
if you ever make... Al, I'm sorry.
No, please, Jeff. Please, you go.
I was going to say, if they ever venture into Elder's Quorum, the movie, something like that.
Oh, Jeff is a great Elder's Quorum.
It's good to know. That's good to know. Okay. Go ahead and send me your headshot.
I want a demo video.
I'm gonna take your picture, right?
Yeah, we'll just take your picture right now. For our headshot. We'll keep it in there.
We'll put it on the wall. Do we have
we're
a
gonna
wall?
File it. Don't worry.
Do we have a wall? Yeah, we're gonna start a wall.
We're gonna start a wall.
This is all lies. This is all lies.
Burst my bubble, Al. How dare you?
No, Jeff, you're really good. It's really good. But maybe not. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. Anyway, so the movie opens tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
Once I was a beehive opens tomorrow.
Yep.
August 14th. Now, you're only in Utah markets. Are you also hitting up, Arizona? Other
this is the – well, that's the hope. So this opening weekend, because we're an independent, film, we don't have the big bucks to go marketing like a lot of the other major So, word of mouth, we want a great, strong opening weekend – so that we can confirm other theaters across the country.
What is the play for like a Mormon film? Is it more just kind of get to DVD and blow up those sales there? Because you're not going to find, we're smattered. We're sort of salt of the earth folk all over the place.
Yeah, but what's great about this movie, though, is that we're not just marketing to an LDS audience.
Oh, hello.
This is a great movie that if you're not, LDS, you'll still get something out of it. I grew up in the Midwest. I don't know if you know.
Oh, yeah, Nebraska. Huh, weird.
And I have a lot of really great, very, very religious friends of different faiths who I know that they would love this
and
movie.
Is there a,
and that they can relate to it,
is
too.
Is there a digital download option in the works? Are you going to go the Gaffigan route and just sell it right on your website?
No, we can't afford that. Thanks for the idea. No, we want to go for a big theatrical.
Yeah, we have
release.
A great distributor, Purdy Distribution. He distributed Meet the Mormons, Saratov, Freetown.
Yeah, nice.
So he's got great ties to theaters across the country. And
Meet the Mormons was the family home evening activity of choice for a number of weeks.
Yeah, we're... And really, if you want more movies like this to get made, in independent films, the reality of it does need
absolutely.
A big theatrical opening. There's no other way around
it. All right, people. So go see it.
That's our
go
hope.
Support.
So please go see it opening weekend. Thanks.
Yeah, and you can also, if you're not in Utah, you can go to our Facebook page or our website, girlscampmovie.com. And you can demand it to come to your area.
Oh, jeez.
I just go in and demand all the cities. North Carolina, demand. Nebraska, demand.
Very,
we want to
very
go.
Aggressive.
Let me demand them all. So.
This is going to aggressive. Be in, this will be in Biloxi, Mississippi if it's the last thing I do. That is what we are
doing. Oh, I will, I will demand
Thank
it.
You.
We will all demand it.
Don't mess.
Well, that's great. That's great. Thanks you guys for coming and joining us. It's fun to talk to you, even though we had some technical struggles.
I know. Sorry about that.
But we've made it in
I'm
the
sure
end.
It's one of my kids' fault.
Yeah, it's
it was. This is what happens when you do things live, right? This is
I know,
this is the risk.
Right? This is real.
Yeah, it's very authentic.
Yes, well, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Haley Smith, Lisa Valentine Clark, everyone go see their exciting movie, Once I Was a Beehive, coming out right now. It'll be very exciting. Awesome. So, thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much. That was fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well,
they were actually very amusing. We've had various guests on the show in the past, and I highly enjoyed them.
Some of our better guests.
Haley and Lisa, you are welcome back anytime. Thank you for that. That was a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is what happens when you bring improv comedians onto the show.
Apparently, that's the thing. See, and that's a bigger thing in Utah than you realize. And the only hard thing about improv in Utah is it's so Mormon centric. I feel like you go to the whatever comedy thing in Provo or in Salt Lake, and the funniest things are primary talk jokes and things like that. Or they try and go the opposite way. And so I'm sure these ones very funny, very funny people that we just now met.
Yeah, like you can make thing. Here's a joke that popped in my head. It's not even fleshed out yet. I bet you could build a joke around like making a tithing, kind of like the same as a health savings account, some sort of pre-tax kind of thing.
Where you pay in. Okay, oh yeah.
There's
a
joke there somewhere.
No, we'll work on that. We're not Steve improv Solberg. People, you and I.
Steve, put it together. Or Lisa and Haley, you make the joke.
You do it. You make.
You're hired.
Now you sound like my mom. I thought of a joke for you. Yeah, Ma, what's it? I was at the grocery store the other day, and there was a man that was buying a pork tenderloin, and it just seemed funny. You might work on that.
Is your mom Jewish?
No. Well, I have a dream to someday be a stand-up comedian. You know this.
I do know this. Yeah.
And so people that are close to me oftentimes will give me their joke material as a gift, as though I'm deprived of good joke material.
Everyone, if you have jokes you want to make Al give, his email address is al@thisweekofmormons.com. Send him an email.
Yeah, no, send it on. I'm really excited.
If you want me to see it as well, just send that to contact@thisweekofmormons.com, and we will both see it. But that's your choice. You know,
I feel like this leads in very well. Just send us notes on anything, jokes or interesting factoids that you might have that Jeff might not know. If you have any geography quiz questions, Jeff loves those.
You can actually play me on Quiz Up. We can play geography ones together.
Add him on Quiz Up.
I'd be very excited.
And then come visit thisweekofmormons.com to see the things we write, the things we say, and to participate in the discussion.
Well, I wasn't ready for this. I didn't think we were saying goodbye already. I wasn't ready. But you know what else we have, folks? I did want to talk about the cuddle parties, but I'll skip them. Okay? I'll skip them.
Oh, jeez.
But anyway, folks, also social media, wonderful place to be. Facebook, robust all over Facebook. Twitter
is really good on there.
Instagram. By the way, we failed to give a shout-out happy birthday to Elder Oaks. So what up? Happy birthday, Elder Oaks. I failed to do it this week. I was supposed to do it the other day. I didn't do it. And join us in all those places. It'd be great. Nice to have all of you with us.
All right. We'll talk to you next week.
Everyone, as I always say from here on out, be well, be holy.
As I always say from here on out.
And be happy.
My tagline is, you are prone to know from starting today.
Stop it. It's supposed to be the last thing I say, like the sign off. The last, very last thing. So go away.
You stay classy, San Diego.
Go away, Al. Go away.
All right. See you, buddy.
Okay. And be well, be holy, be happy. Ha-ha!
What is the matter with these people? Oh, now this feels perfect.
Yeah, you know Steve Solberg, yes?
Yes!